Joining me on the WBGO Journal is Reverend Vernon Williams from the Fountain Baptist Church in Summit. He is also the Vice President of the Summit Interfaith Council. The council is sponsoring a virtual protest and rally with an in-person funeral procession through the streets of Summit this Sunday afternoon to call attention to police brutality and extrajudicial killing of black and brown bodies. Thanks for joining us, first of all.
Thank you.
Tell us what you're feeling right now. The world is in an uproar over what has happened recently. What does the Fountain Baptist Church think about what's going on?
Well, at Fountain, obviously we share with our brothers and sisters of color the anger and outrage of yet another senseless killing and the open lynching of a person of color. And we are at a point of saying we can be silent no more. Yes, we may have been doing or trying to fight against racism, but now we have got to be more vigilant and more vocal and more present within the community in order to eradicate this this cancer of racism that continues to persist in the nation and indeed in our very community.
You're the vice president of the Summit Interfaith Council. The president is Rabbi Hannah Orden. There are three Jewish houses of worship in the council. Can you tell us about the others who are involved?
The council is made up of some 15 houses of worship, which are Unitarian Universalists, with Presbyterian, of course, Baptist, Baha'i Faith, Mormons, United Methodist, Christ Scientist Church, Church of Christ, Holiness Church, and a few others that escape me right now.
Being a virtual Zoom webinar at 4:30 on Sunday, linked to Facebook Live, obviously, a lot of people would want to be there physically, but with what's going on, obviously, you're taking precautions as well.
Absolutely. And so one of the things that we are aware of is that, especially for our congregations, which is a slightly older congregation, we know that if we host our event, they will come out and they will do their best at social distancing. And so to ensure that we don't place them in an adverse position, we've decided to do it as a virtual rally in protest for about 30 to 40 minutes. And then we would invite everyone who are remaining in their cars, then invite them to drive through the streets of Summit to show our memorialization of those who have been killed and our disgust and disdain with what has happened. But yet, we're going to be calling folks to action on ways in which they can take direct action right now. So we will give them two or three action items to leave with.
New Jersey has been one of the leaders when it comes to peaceful protests. How do you feel about that?
I think that as far as I have seen, virtually all of the protests have been peaceful. Those protests that have broken out in violence, if you look, have been to a large part instigated by aggressive and militaristic police action. Anywhere that there is a protest in which the police are willing to treat those of us who are fighting against racism as they would treat those who are fighting for the, if you will, for their right to be racist, in my language, obviously. Example, in Michigan, when those who fight for their rights for the Second Amendment and their right to come out of sheltering in place were stormed the Capitol. I don't know how else you say it, when they were literally in the Capitol building with armed weapons, and yet officers stood at attention, no riot gear on. They were accosted, verbally, and did not flinch. Yet when we peacefully protest, we are met immediately with riot gear, batons, tear gas, A natural outflow is anger and lashing out. And so obviously no one is for violence in protest, but when we can't peacefully protest, I think violence is the natural outflow.
We're speaking with Reverend Vernon Williams of the Fountain Baptist Church. The event coming up on Sunday, with the Summit Interfaith Council sponsoring a virtual protest and rally and an in-person funeral procession through the streets of Summit. Reverend Williams is the vice president of the Summit Interfaith Council. As a man of faith, what have you been hearing from members of your congregation? Maybe the toughest question that you've received, and how have you tried to answer it?
So I think the toughest question is, we're angry and we want to take action and retribution at this time. And obviously, as a person of color who has been racially profiled, it's hard to deny that that anger. However, as a man of faith and one who believes in the principles of Christ, we try to redirect that anger into righteous indignation. Not that we're asking them to be passive and do nothing, but to be passive and radically fight against what we are experiencing. And so now we're not saying, we'll be silent and to just get along, but that we must upset the apple cart. It is imperative in that our righteous fight is the right way to go. And whoever is upset, so be it. It has to be because as black and brown bodies, we are hurting, we are being destroyed, and we can no longer allow that to go unchallenged.
What conversations can you have with children during this?
I think certainly depending upon the age, what we need to be able to do is to be sensitive to how they will respond to what has happened. But I do think that we need to be able to find language in which to be able to talk to them about what has transpired. But be very careful and attentive to how they are responding. I don't think that if we continue to attempt to hold back or shield them from it, when unfortunately racism does not shield them from itself. In fact, it is very upfront for them, and they are experiencing it. And so we're going to have to find ways to communicate to them what is transpiring, as well as making sure that they understand this is not something that this is not their fault. Racism has always been here, and racism will continue to be here if we continue to allow it to progress unchallenged.
The Summit Interfaith Council, through its anti-racism committee, forms STAR, Strong Teens Against Racism. STAR is a professional safe space anti-racism and bias training for teens, and they use consultants' roots, Rising Over Oppression Through Solidarity, as their trainers. This is the third year of providing teen training. If you have the opportunity, Reverend Williams, to be speaking with those who can make changes, what would you say? What can be done, in your opinion, to make this world a more respectful and better place, and a place where everyone can feel safe?
Well, those who are in power, one, know that they are in power. They know what is the right thing to do. And so what we need them to do is quit acting as though they are unfamiliar with what to do. We need you to do the right thing. We need you to know that if you know that this hurts me, then do the right thing and change it. Make the corrections. Because if what is occurring to me would hurt you, what would you do? And so to throw the question, those for those in power, to throw the question back to me would be as if to say to me that perhaps somehow we deal with pain and we deal with hurt and we deal with discrimination and we deal with segregation differently than they would, which makes me unlike them or not equal to them. So if you're in power, you know the right thing to do, and we need you to do that. If, as the prosecutor in Minneapolis said, that we all saw what the individual did and the officers did, which was heinous, which was horrible, yet he had to find out if it was against the law. If that is the case, then the people in power need to make sure that the next time something like that happens, we don't have to find out if it's against the law. It should already be against the law because they're going to make it so.
Reverend Williams, can you talk a little bit about the fact when you were racial profile?
Which one do I give you?
You can give me as many as you like.
Yeah, I'll give you one. When I was finished my freshman year of college, and a buddy of mine, I had gotten off of work. I was working as an intern at the Anheuser-Busch Corporation in St. Louis, Missouri. And I was taking, as a young engineering intern, I was taking a class at the local community college, and a physics class, in fact. And my buddy, who had just recently gone to the Army, had just gotten out of boot camp, called me up, and because we hadn't seen each other for some time, was willing to go with me and wait for me at the college until we got done so that we could hang out afterwards. And so in broad daylight, at approximately around 5:30 or so, I'm trying to remember because it's some years ago, he and I, we're catching up on things as I'm driving to the community college. We are just talking. And when I get into an area called Jennings, and Jennings is the police force in which the officer who killed Michael Brown had been fired from. And the minute we crossed the line between St. Louis City and into Jennings, and a police car was so close on my bumper. And mind you, this is 5:30 p.m. in the evening when it's broad daylight. And because we know how that police department had operated, we knew he was going to pull us over. It's a traffic jam. So the minute I drive through the light, I because we were in traffic jam, I couldn't have been doing more than 20 miles an hour. He pulls me over. He forces the two of us to, he and his partner force the two of us to get out of the car. I know that this is not going to go well. And so what he does is he asks for my ID. I give him my ID. He asks for ID from my buddy who had just gotten out of the armed services, out of the Army for boot camp. He did not have an ID, but he had his dog tags. He took his dog tags. And all these people who talk about saluting the flag, here is a man who desecrated the flag. He took his dog tags and then made him spread eagle. Can you imagine what that does to to teenagers who had done absolutely nothing? And everyone driving by thinking that what have we done? And so, and I'm sure you could hear it in my voice out. While that may be, that was some 30 plus years ago, it's still fresh for me. And so what ends up happening is he pats him down. He then searches my car. He goes through the driver's side, comes out the passenger side. And the first words he says to us is, "How many times you boys been in jail?" Now, again, why do our people, our young men have to go through that? I retorted, sarcastically to him. And so he says, "So you all are," and I told him that we obviously had never been to jail. "So you all are some good old boys." And then he goes back through the rear seat of my the passenger rear seat of the car. And so I look to his partner who's sitting there silent or standing there silent. And I ask him, why are you doing this? And he says, just be quiet. It'll be over soon. And, you know, the person I was most disgusted with was with that officer because he knew what he was doing was wrong. And then all of a sudden he gets out. He didn't find anything. And so my concern was he going to plant something in broad daylight? So he was not afraid of this looking bad because he knew that most of the people looking were probably expecting that what we had done was bad and that what he was doing was righteous. And so when he let me go, I'm sorry, you know, but I had a really tough time hurting or feeling for officers who would deem to say there are good cops, because the good cop that was there told me to accept it and to go along with it.
Going through that experience, and then, as you said, just one of the times that has happened to you, and then seeing what happened with George Floyd on the video, I'm sure that probably brought it all up again.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And countless of us who go through that understand. Now imagine, had rather than just a little sarcastic remark that I had for the officer, if I tried to get even more aggressive, what the officer would have done. And the sad part is we have a society that would have then said, well, I shouldn't have said anything. Rather than saying what this officer and those like him and a system that accepts what he did, rather than saying that what they did is heinous and wrong and illegal, they accept what is done. And so you have a system, not just officers, but you have a system that promotes it.
And knowing that the exact same words were used by George Floyd that was used by Eric Garner, you would have to assume that those officers were aware of the Eric Garner case. Yet when the people who took various videos from the street told them, why are you doing this? It didn't seem to register.
Absolutely. But that then speaks to a broader, a larger problem. Whereas this individual was not even concerned. I mean, look, when you look at the video, he's looking directly at the young lady who's recording him and knows that what he's doing is, in his mind, he's going to be, nothing's going to come of it. And so whether they were familiar with Eric Garner or not, I believe what they're basically doing is thumbing their nose and saying, what are you going to do? Similar to what I liken it to is spectacle lynching, where you had folks who would lynch blacks in broad daylight and were not afraid to take pictures of them. We have pictures of folks smiling, children at, you know, this is after church. We know the pictures. We know the scenes. And yet, to this day, we act as though we can't identify them. And so to say that we will not identify them is to say we accept this. And that is essentially, for me, Chauvin was telling us, we're going back to the days of spectacle lynching, and what are you going to do about it? And so we have a society that hopefully now is saying, we're fed up. You can no longer do this. And so officers are not afraid of body cameras because they will, you know, because there will always be, you know, let's investigate first rather than saying, no, you're wrong. And understand that it wasn't that body camera, you know, that video was not seen. The video was seen. And what was done? There was an immediate reaction to explain it away. And so now we have the hurt of actually seeing it, and now we have the hurt of them explaining it away and telling us we should agree with it.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about Sunday's event?
We would like for those who are available to come out and be with us as we process through the streets of Summit, and to see the pictures of those who will, who were killed due to police brutality, due to racism, due to white supremacy. We need to understand that this is not a police problem. This is an institutional, a systemic problem of racism and an ideology that says that people of color are not equal, that people of color or do not deserve the God-given human rights that that we are to be afforded. And so we invite you to come out on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. And we will direct you to our staging lot to park and to listen to our protest and rally, which will be about 30 to 40 minutes. And then we will process through and pass each house of worship. And we invite you to actually look at these individuals who were murdered, and to resolve that you will not allow the fact that their light has gone out, that your light will continue to not be shining in this moment, to say no more. We've had it, we've fed up, and we're going to change this.
Sunday's event will start from the Summit High School parking lot, and you can view the service rally at the Facebook page of the Summit Interfaith Council. Reverend Vernon Williams of the Fountain Baptist Church in Summit and the Vice President of the Summit Interfaith Council, thanks so much for joining us on the WBGO Journal.
Doug, thank you very much. I appreciate it.